the Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and joining me today, he just finished running barefoot laps around the park, and he's ready to pod. It's Justin Hausman!
Is barefoot running still a thing?
It was for that guy we saw the other day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Colin and I were getting ready for a mountain bike ride the other day, and we were by this little city park, and there was the dude just running laps in this park with no shoes on. I will say, the few things feel better than like bare feet on lush green grass, though, right? I mean, like, yeah. That guy was probably just like, honestly, he's probably just like, this is summer's coming, and he was just so excited he had to go take a few laps.
He wasn't like in full on like workout regalia, like I'm warming up before I do some burpees here in the park or something like that. He was in, I'm just gonna run laps in the park with my hoodie on and.
But that's kind of cool. I'm into that. That seems like that should be right up our alley. Like not like doing stuff not in technical gear. I mean, I wear jorts and I ride my bikes most of the time. You know, it's kind of nice to just people just you know you can go for a run in just regular shorts. They don't have to be made by. I don't know. I don't know any running companies. They don't have to be made by a running company.
All right. Well, today we're going to run through some of the more notable or exciting headlines to come out of the outdoor industry and community. But before we get to that, hey there, new listeners. If you've just joined the Rock Fight, please follow the show wherever you're listening, whether that's on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast app. And please click follow so you're subscribed and you never miss an episode. And then we want you to head over to rockfight.co and sign up for our newsletter that comes out every Sunday and includes stuff like our Justin Hausman retrospective, Rose Colored Hausman, which we'll have a new issue of in this Sunday's newsletter, which you missed because it came out yesterday, yeah. But a bunch of other goodies as well. Go to rockfight.co and click join the mailing list. No outdoor history this week because David is bringing his daughter home from college. So no history this week. I know, it's kind of a bummer. Lastly, do you want to pick a fight with the Rock Fight? Well, maybe you just send an email to say hi, you know, make a suggestion for something that Justin can do over the weekend. We love hearing from our listeners. So join the ranks of Tacoma Phil and send your emails to myrockfight@gmail.com. Anything to add to that?
We should have a phone number they can call and leave a message.
Oh, fuck yeah, we should do that. I don't know. We've gotten some pretty crazy emails.
Yeah, but it'd be kind of fun because then we could play them live.
That's a good point.
Play them on the air.
The listener of the week. You know, the rant of the week.
Well, they could just say hi to their buddy, you know.
Right. Hey, man, I'm listening to The Rock Fight.
Hope you are, too. See ya.
Hope you are, too.
See you in the park, barefoot.
All right, well, we're recording this on Friday, May 10th. You're hearing it on Monday, May 13th, which means that in between then and now, we had ourselves a weekend. And that also means it's time for America's favorite podcast segment. What is Justin doing this weekend? Presented by Long Weekend Coffee. So, Justin, what are you up to this weekend?
Pretty sure that my weekend is going to consist entirely of hiding around the corner and watching my 5-year-old and 2.5-year-old go walking around the block without me, because this is their new thing.
They're like all independent. They're going to go for a walk.
Yes. So this is like 2 days now in a row where they'll come outside and like, we're going to go for a walk. And like, I'm like, all right, great. And then like Olivia, the 5-year-old, would be like, Dad, you are not coming. You cannot come. You stay right there. But it's like, you know, we live on like a small town with small streets, but people whip around these streets. So I have to creep to the other side, like where they're going to come out, like on my bike and like hide behind cars so they don't see me because they'll just get all mad.
Have you been busted yet?
No, not really. I mean, like by the time they see me, usually they've had their independence long enough to where they feel okay about it. But it's pretty cute because I can watch them from a distance. In fact, I think today, because I'm sure they'll want to, I'll get binoculars out and actually get a real close look at them. But they're like, you know, usually barefoot and just kind of hair akimbo and just, you know, investigating like every plant. It's pretty cute. So that's probably going to be my whole weekend because it's pretty dang fun. And it's not really up to me what they're
I'm looking
do.
At, just pickling up your house on Google. Oh, dude, they just go around the block with like,
yeah, exactly. But that's stretch
tiny.
On
tiny. Come on.
Oh, it's fine. That part's fine. Except that cars like fly around.
I'll cut out the address name. Sorry.
That's cars fly around, a couple of those streets. Like,
really?
Yeah.
You're like in the middle of a bunch of other.
I know.
You're surrounded on all sides.
Yeah, but that little tiny connector where like at the end of between and like cars will just kind of come around that too fast. You know, there's like people like delivery cars, like people getting like takeout or whatever. And then Waco, which you can see there, that street drives me insane because like people fly down that to avoid downtown. So just have to make sure they're on the sidewalk. That's all. I mean, Harper's 2.5. Like I can't. you know, yeah. she doesn't know what she's doing.
This is where, you know, the technology has benefited us. So the, cause my one
shot
of my
caller,
exactly. Did you get one yet? A big range from the remote. You can
really
just like,
about
they'll
it.
Come
yeah.
right home.
Yeah.
Dad, it hurts. Like, oh, I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
We have a deli down the street and we live off of a busy road. And she's, my daughter's in middle school, but she likes to just walk down there. But, you know, because now they all have devices, they're older, but because of Life 360, the whole family's on Life 360.
Oh, I forgot about Life 360.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
I don't think the kids really thought about it when they're like, oh, we should all be on. They're the ones who wanted to do it.
Yeah.
They're like, okay. So I can just watch her and she's moving along, you know, and she's on her way back. And at any moment, like, and I don't have to bug her, you know, do the thing. She's allowed to have her independence. But I can just, you know, I can track her on my phone. Sounds terrible, but it's also pretty great. So technology.
A couple months ago, I went down to Joshua Tree to film a gear shoot for Adventure Journal. And on the way back, I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop in Visalia, like a little crap town in the Central Valley. Not even that little, like decent sized town, Central Valley that I lived in until I was like 12.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of driving around and trying to kind of remember where stuff was. I don't really ever go back there. But at one point I was like, oh, I want to go find my old Little League fields because they were really nice in my memory. Mm-hmm. And so I found them and I forgot that one of them was right next to the junior high I went to in seventh grade. And what's wild to me is that my mom would drive me to this school with my bike in the trunk. Like, I don't know why, okay. Probably because I was too, like, I didn't want to ride that far in the mornings. It was cold or whatever. Like, I don't know why I didn't just ride there, but she would drive me to school with the bike in the trunk. And then I would lock the bike up at school. Then it was time to leave. I'd ride the bike home. And so I remember it being a long way, like when I was a kid, like just, but that's, I didn't want to ride the bus. So I would just do that. Just driving it. I was just like, holy shit, this is a long way. Like many miles. And I was 12. I mean, yeah. like, and my mom would have had no idea where I was at any
None.
Of those. She's just like sitting in her office, just tapping
just
away at a computer.
She'd see you later tonight.
Yeah. And like, I'm just here. Like a hugely busy boulevard. And I remember I'd ride like in this little dirt path next to it. And then like, I have to cross all these huge streets. I mean, I think you'd go to prison now if you let your kids do that. I mean, it was crazy. Like, I can't fathom letting my kids ride their bike on that stretch now, but that's just how it was.
All right, well, what is Justin doing this weekend is presented by Long Weekend Coffee. Oh, we are. We're taking suggestions for the future editions of Justin's Weekend. If you want to start off your days, adventures, and all your weekends the right way, head to longweekend.coffee, load up on a batch of beans like the Secret Handshake, enter the promo code ROCK10 at checkout to get 10% off your first order. Long Weekend Coffee, more weekend, please.
And all more right, coffee. More coffee,
and
please.
More coffee.
And more coffee.
God, can't have enough coffee.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into some headlines.
Just do it.
All right, so first we have, this is kind of a sad story. Three tourists found dead in Mexico. They were shot in the head. And their bodies were dumped in a well. Authorities have confirmed. Officials believe the men were attacked trying to stop the theft of their pickup truck. They are Australian brothers Jake and Callum Robinson, 30 and 33, and their American friend Jack Carter Road, who was 30. They disappeared on April 27th while on a surfing trip in Ensenada. Relatives of the three men identified their bodies on Sunday after traveling to Mexico to assist authorities. We don't really get into the kind of if it bleeds, it leads stories here on the Rock Flight, but I think we both figured this warranted a conversation. I mean, you've been on surf trips to Baja in the past. I mean, how does, you know, reading or hearing about something like this kind of factor into your thinking, I guess, for any, like, just future trips or?
No, I'm not going anymore. I mean, this exact thing happened. I thought it was funny. I thought it was like 2 years ago, but I think it was 8 years ago. But basically the same thing. Australians. I don't remember. I think it was just two, maybe not three. Kind of murky circumstances. I think they were deeper into Baja, but like really murky circumstances. They don't think they ever really figured out exactly what went wrong or what happened. But same deal, you know, and like, they were missing for a lot longer. And so there was a little bit of it was dragged out. But yeah, I don't think I'm going anymore. It's not really worth it. Especially not with a family. I've been to Baja, I don't know, three or four times on surf trips, a couple times really deep into Baja and, never felt unsafe at all. I mean, I'm talking like really deep into Baja where it's like a 10 hour drive from the border. No GPS, no, you know, back in the olden days, you know, you had like a written description of like how to get to where you were going kind of a thing. You know, you turn right at the third cactus past this guy who might have gas in his truck by the old burnt out church or whatever, you know, and like you just kind of trusting it'll be fine. And like it always was fine. And like we never had any issues other than like kind of normal shakedowns from the policia around places like Ensenada and Tijuana. I did see a dead body on the road in Tijuana on one of her trips, which was gnarly.
Jesus.
But yeah, like it was like it used to be you just didn't want to get arrested. Like that was like the main thing. Like you didn't want to get arrested or like say the wrong thing to the cops. So you'd always have money, but we were never worried about someone hurting us other than maybe the insane truck drivers on Highway 1. Cause that is way more terrifying than anything else I've ever experienced in my life. But, yeah, it's things have changed quite a bit. I mean, I guess the cartel violence has really spilled over to affecting everybody else. I mean, from what I understand, and I've done some digging on this story, it sounds like it's hard to say. I mean,
it's a theft gone wrong is what it sounds like.
I don't know. It sounds like they'd been there before and like, you're not going to like fight off somebody with a gun taking your truck. Like that doesn't seem right to me. Like I've read before that oftentimes in these situations, they're just mistaken for either undercover agents or like other cartel until they see them or something like that. But I don't know. It could have been something. It could have been as simple as a stolen car. But everything I'm reading now is just saying that it used to be that cartel violence, they kind of would not screw with tourists because they didn't want to like add the extra hassle. But now it just seems like it doesn't really matter anymore. But things have gotten a lot worse. I don't know why, but things have gotten a lot worse in Baja in the last like 20 years.
Have they gotten worse or were you just kind of younger?
No, they've gotten worse. Worse. Like, I mean, like there's like State Department warnings about like don't go to Baja. And that was never the case back in the olden days. And like, yeah, I mean, your main concern in the past was I don't want my truck to break or I don't want to get arrested. Nothing like it is now, to the point where I was going to go last year for my birthday to do a surf trip on the East Cape of Baja. And I invited a couple of people. One of them said yes. And the other guy was like, nope, absolutely not. It's just not worth it. You know, like there's plenty of places you can go where you don't even have to think about it, any kind of crime like affecting you. So it's really sad because Baja is a pretty incredible place. And it used to be, you know, it used to feel like dangerous, but in a sort of a soft dangerous way, like an adventurous dangerous way. Like you might get stranded and have to like figure it out, you know, nothing like this. I mean, the problem is like you'll run into characters in Baja and you have no idea who they are, like what they're doing, you know, like even in the middle of the desert, like guys will walk up to you, you know, and be like, have little signs. And you're like, I don't know what that says. I don't read Spanish that well. And they'll sort of basically tell you, oh, this is our family's land. If you're camping on it, we'd like you to give us some money. And you're just like, all right, fine. Here's $5, you know, or whatever. And that's it. And like, but never was I ever worried about that. But now every time if I went down there, anytime anybody approached me, I'd be freaked out. So nope, not going. These guys didn't do anything wrong. I mean, like if you want to go, okay, but I'm not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely condolences to the families and, you know, I guess, time to start looking at Central America. Time for more Panama trips.
I mean, I was like, it's funny because you used to be, you didn't want to go to El Salvador or like Nicaragua, but like I've been to Nicaragua and it was super safe, you know? I mean, there's places where you wouldn't want to go.
Right.
I've been to like parts of Panama that were, you know, used to be completely non, you know, you just couldn't go there at all. Now they're totally safe. So maybe Baja will be like that at some point, but
right.
I don't know. I mean, it's weird. Like even compared to the rest of Mexico, Baja feels like super, if you've never been there, I mean, it does, once you leave like Ensenada, it is literally the Wild West.
All right. Well, the next thing we had is a story about that we actually talked about a few months ago about the Arctic Cowboys, who are a group of paddlers who made history last year with the first human-powered paddle of the Northwest Passage, and then had charges filed against them for allegedly violating Canada National Parks and the Canada National Parks and Migratory Birds Acts. Well, we got an update this week that all charges have been dropped. According to journalist Jeff Pelletier and covered in Paddling Magazine, at a hearing this past Monday, prosecutors withdrew charges, while the court offered no detailed explanation as to why the charges were ultimately dropped. Defense lawyer Allison Crow commented that it's possible they didn't see a reasonable chance of conviction. Hmm. So they had about, I think it was 43 or 45 charges per paddler, and it was four of them. So I don't know. Any thoughts?
I don't remember how did they know where they were? Like not the paddlers, but the authorities.
That's a good question.
Did we talk about that?
I think we did. They were on the island for like 2 weeks because they were iced out.
There can't be any, I mean, it's interesting. I don't think there's any doubt that they were there. So how could they not get convicted? That's weird.
Well, I was hoping for more details in the article because it's like 45 charges against you.
They probably don't want to say
you.
Why though. Because I remember talking about this and thinking, well, it's kind of bullshit if it was like, they didn't have a choice because they were like off track,
right,
or like they needed to stay there. And like, you, I mean, at the same point, you wouldn't even care if you got a ticket. It'd be like, fine, you know, or a misdemeanor, whatever the charges were. But, you know, so it's also, I could see the court just being like, well, we can't say that like, it seemed like it was probably an accident or they had no choice. Cause then it's like, everybody would
mess anything up while they were there. Probably.
Yeah, but then like everybody could say that. They just be like, oh, we're going to do the same thing. And they just pretend like we didn't have a choice, you know, like, and that's so maybe
true.
That's probably why they don't release details about that kind of thing.
But I mean, this crew was out trying to like do this thing for the first time. They weren't looking to like go camp on this island for 2 weeks.
Yeah, they
weren't.
Yeah. They didn't like bring a bunch of beers to just go like fuck up some migratory birds. I mean, they're the Arctic Cowboys after all.
Yeehaw.
I do remember saying that I feel like there should be like a cooling off period for these kinds of things where you like look at it and go, okay, this is bad. We're going to set their charges on the shelf. Okay. We're just going to leave them there. And then we're just going to kind of think about it for a while and see like, was there any lasting damage? Is anybody else doing it? Does it seem like maybe to actually like just kind of cool off a bit and just see how we feel in like a year or two. And I know it hasn't been that long, but maybe that's kind of what happened here.
They're maybe,
just
but like, maybe the judge got to it. He's like, fine. What are we doing here, everybody? Like, just everybody go home. It's like, this is over.
Maybe
they got some birds in.
Maybe they had some birds in on the witness stand. The birds were like, they were great. They were fine.
Yeah.
They didn't bother
us. Breadcrumbs. It was
a
good time.
They didn't lead me astray. Like, I still got to mate. It was great. I really enjoyed meeting these guys.
But is this the, I was thinking like, is this the climax of the film adaptation of the story? Oh. Like they're in the courtroom. Like, yeah, we bailed out. Or is it actually them finishing the paddling of the Northwest Passage? Like where does the film put the triumphant moment?
Good question. I guess it depends on, is the film about the trial or about the experience? It's a good, it could be the kind of thing where you think the movie's over, but then it's like, it becomes a weird 20-minute like courtroom processional at the end.
Yeah, maybe it's like The Social Network, where the whole time like they're in the hearing, like they're in the courtroom.
Oh,
but
that's what it'll
flashing
be.
Back.
That's what it'll
right?
be. That's what it'll
yeah.
be. Yep.
Yeah.
That's scary because you're gonna want to talk about the courtroom situation. That's exactly
right.
what it's gonna be like.
Right. Because then you show them triumphantly finishing the paddle, but then you end the film in the court, and then we beat the charges.
That's the only way you can make this film because people wouldn't care enough. Like, what are you doing? People paddle across horrendous things all the time. Should we
make this movie?
What's weird is, okay, so when this whole thing is really confusing. Like, who can write the screenplay and how that all works? Like, we could just write a screenplay based on this story.
Oh, sure.
And maybe get it sold.
Changes a few details.
I mean,
yeah, it was in, we're in Scandinavia instead of Canada, right? I mean, it's like,
you just have to like beat someone else to it. It's so weird.
Yeah.
I mean, when I sold the rights to the Ralph Plaisted story I wrote, it's like, I didn't come up with that story. Like, I didn't,
you could just adapt this yourself.
Right, it's weird, but you can't. It's weird.
I know, because then you'd be like, I wrote that story, and you could sue them or whatever.
It's so strange.
Well, next thing we had, a couple weeks back, we talked about a story coming out of California about ski resorts and the rise of skiing-related ER visits. You remember chatting about that?
I do, yeah.
We wondered if that was a local thing. We're like, is this our state? Is this happening only in California? Well, we have our answer because Outside reported this week on a collision that occurred at Jackson Hole Resort where a 71-year-old ski instructor later died after the collision, and homicide charges were filed against the uphill skier who caused the collision. In the article, Samantha Berman wrote about the rise of incidents at Colorado ski resorts and how collisions have become more common as ski participation increases coming out of the pandemic. You know, now I've kind of cheekily, you know, poked fun at resort skiing because I don't want to have to pay for my outdoor fun once my gear is, so I have all my gear. But I tell you what, man, just more, and this kind of goes back to the previous story. Like, do I think I'm going to get killed if I go to a ski resort? No, but it definitely gives me pause about going.
Yeah. What I thought about when I saw this was there's a bike path I like to ride that connects a couple of towns in Marin, like where I am down to a little bit further south. It's a really pretty bike path. You don't have to deal with cars. It kind of snakes by. I actually didn't even know it was there for a long time. It's paved, but it like goes by a little creek and then it goes by another bigger creek and then an estuary, and it's awesome. But not that long. I want to say maybe a year and a half ago, kind of a, you know, similar situation. An older man was killed by somebody on an e-bike that collided with him. And, you know, I ride that trail. I ride it with my e-bike occasionally. And, you know, it's, I, what I, I obviously my main concern would be I don't want to hit anybody, but the fact that you can be charged with a homicide for it is really interesting. You know, I don't know what exactly that means. Like, does that mean like manslaughter? Sure, certainly doesn't mean murder charges.
Yeah.
But that's a huge, huge deal. I mean, I presume that the courts will probably say that, you know, the guy that died knew the risks. I mean, he was out there, you know.
They cited a few other instances of this happening, and any other time it happened, it was usually like someone that had spent like 90 days in jail and they were fined or something like that. It's not like you're going to go to prison for life if something like this happened. But I mean, apparently it was like a blue square. It was like an intermediate trail. You know, the person coming downhill, it's like, you know, you're not on, you're on terrain where you need to be aware of who's in front of you at all times anyway. I mean,
not supposed to go uphill in that? I mean, that seems kind of weird. Like, so someone was skinning up the downhill section or something?
No, meaning the skier that was uphill.
That was above him.
Yeah,
uphill,
that was above
him
and
I'm
caused
sorry.
The collision.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, my daughter was hit by a snowboarder once. It can happen, especially on busy days. Usually there's space. And like, I don't know why you'd be skiing so at such a speed or that much out of control that it could even be a risk. You know, that you could run into somebody and cause any sort of injury.
Well, I, you know, I've wondered often, like, at what point will I ever have like a collision with somebody on a mountain bike trail? Not whether it's a hiker or another mountain biker, you know, and it's never happened. It's never really even come that close.
Yeah.
Thankfully, most of the time the trails around here are relatively directional. And so it would be weird if it did, but you know, there are times where you come tire to tire with somebody like, holy smokes, but it's never that close. But, you know, I have a hard time imagining like trying to hold somebody liable for that. Cause you both know that when you're out there, that there's going to be other people on the trails. I mean, this is kind of going on in surfing a little bit where people will like sue each other for like colliding in the water, you know, and like causing damage to their board or injuring them. And I don't know, part of me feels like unless you're doing if you're like bombing down a hill at a really high rate of speed and you shouldn't be there and you shouldn't be doing that, then I feel like, yeah, there's a reason to like hold you accountable. But for the most part, I tend to think like,
yeah, you sign up for this when you're out there.
Yeah.
Right? It can happen.
This is like dumb risk, right? Like this is like something you can't really plan for this. I guess you kind of can in skiing. You just be more aware, but for the most part, totally. Yeah. It's not like any of these. Yeah. These are freak risk things that you can't really like prepare for.
Yeah, and I think the big takeaway from the skier one is just the rise. I mean, the California story, now hearing about this, and it's just like there are more of these injuries starting to happen. And I don't know what the solve there is. I mean, you know, on the surface, you'd say more people skiing, better for the economy, good for the snow sports industry. All that's not a bad thing. But there needs to be probably some way to address it, whether it's a crackdown on the mountain from ski patrol of people who are out there, like more, maybe it's more patrollers. I mean, God, everyone's paying so much for
what
passes.
What about
skiers? Well, now
you're
speaking
the
my
solution.
Language.
That's the solution.
I'm trying to like extend an olive branch, and you're drawing me right back into fuck
that's
skiing.
That's the solution.
So. Uphill only.
Yeah.
You can only, if you want to get to the top, you got to skin.
Yep.
Skin that's only ski resorts.
The only way.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad. I'm obviously for this person's family. I feel bad for the person. He obviously wasn't intending to hit this guy. You know,
yeah, totally.
I'm sure. But anyway, we'll see how this plays out. We got a couple Everest updates because it's been a particularly busy Everest season. So two updates this week. First is from Explorers Web, who reports that despite last week's high winds, and which decimated tents at camps 1 and 2, more challenges continue to crop up as ice collapses in the Khumbu Icefall and rocks are falling off the Lhotse face, which is slowing progress.
I've heard that will happen more with climate change, like the rocks falling off the face. Yeah, that's crazy.
That's nuts. I guess Camp 4 had also had dealt with some high winds in the last week. The second story was also on Outside, it was about the cost of removing dead bodies from the mountain. There are I should have asked you this as a quiz. There are an estimated 200 dead climbers on Everest, and mounting a recovery mission to get one off the mountain can cost anywhere from $75,000 to $85,000 per body.
How is that possible?
My only real takeaway from these was I just kind of wish can we just stop covering, you know, the climbing season, so then maybe it can go back to being a destination for like actual alpinists instead of just like, you know, rich people who want to brag about climbing a mountain. We've talked about it before. I don't get the allure. You know, 200 bodies, and you know, that article they're kind of quoting like, yeah, it's really off-putting. Like, it's really, people have a tough time with it, and you're like climbing up a mountain, like, oh, yeah, it's a dead body over there.
Yeah, shit. I mean, of course it's off-putting.
Right. And then, Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I saw something the other day about the numbers of permits like this year and last year and everything like that. And it just like still continues to just kind of climb, you know? At some point, something's going to have to be done. I mean, I guess obviously they're doing a bit about you can't poop there. You know, they're doing more trash pickups. Everybody has to bring trash with them, all that kind of stuff. But like, what happens here? What's the ultimate? I mean, I think it actually probably be what I've kind of laid out is that at some point they're going to have to just close it for a while and just kind of
recover. I'm on board with that. Yeah. I mean, I got to think for you it was the same. When I was a kid, hearing about somebody climbing Mount Everest was it was an absolute equivalent as like, oh, that person went to the moon.
Yeah, totally.
Like, that was like, my, really? Yeah. Oh my God. Like that would be like, that's Buzz Aldrin, you know? Yeah. And now it's just sad. I just don't, you know, it's sad because I don't know why you want to go do it.
If you're a mountaineer, I'm sure it holds a lure, you know, even despite all the stuff that we've just said. I mean, it's probably something you fixated on for your whole life. I met any serious mountaineer probably attempts Everest at some point, right? You know, what's interesting is like about like humanity, like that you can hold like two totally different and equally true thoughts in your head, like at the same time. Cause I'm thinking right now about how like Western culture for the most part doesn't really have like a sacred space. Like a space where you just do not go. I mean, like there is, I don't think that really exists.
Detroit, I think.
it is a sacred place.
Sorry, Detroit. I mean, like, that was a blow blow.
I mean, there's places where you're like, oh, I don't want to go in someone else's bedroom. But I mean,
sacred reasons. Place. Like you just, you don't cross that line. There's
certain parts of certain churches, maybe. I don't know. It's not my thing. But for the most part. And I kind of think that's cool. The concept of a sacred space is cool. Like, I wish we did. Yeah. You know, have these places that are like, this is reserved for nobody. Like, nobody needs to do this. Nobody needs to go here. This place is too important for people to screw up or whatever. Like, for whatever reason, we've just decided that no one's going to go there. And it's just, that's going to be for the gods or the spirits anything. Right. I think that's awesome. At the same time, I get why you would feel like, I get to go wherever the fuck I want on this planet. I have one life to live. Nobody owns the land. Like, well, they do, but you know what I mean? Like, nobody has a right to like the top of the world.
Sure.
Like, I deserve to go there and I don't really care what you have to say about it. Like I can also understand that argument. So it's just interesting. I mean, like I still think that they should probably shut it down for a while. Because it's also weird
too
to
much
think,
money.
Like, how is it that, well, of course, but like, it is kind of weird that we just have this sort of belief that like, I deserve to go anywhere, you know, like
that's very American belief.
It's very American. It's also a huge thing in the outdoor community where like, and I don't necessarily love that about us. Like this view. I mean, I kind of have that. We were talking about it over the weekend where I live, it's almost entirely open space that's open to the public, but there's places that aren't. And I really want to get up there. Cause it's like, no, fuck you. I can go everywhere, but not your hill. Like, that's not cool.
Right.
But at the same time, like, it is a bit like, this is something I think about with the overland community a lot, which is like, you shouldn't be able to drive anywhere you want. Like, that's not cool. Like, yeah, cool that your rig can drive over lots of crazy stuff and out in the middle of the deserts and stuff. But maybe you shouldn't be like, why do you think that you get to do that? You know, and like, I do think that it's at least it's worth reflecting on that we have this in, you know, the adventure outdoor space. We have this belief that like we can go anywhere, you know, like the Arctic cowboys, right? Like maybe the crime there was just going, you know what? Like, there's a chance that we're going to end up in this like migratory bird area if we do this. And like, maybe we won't, but we might. And like, that's not cool. And so we're just not going to go. Like, I do think there should be more reflection, generally speaking, about things like that.
Sure. No, I agree with that.
I mean, Everest is obviously like a big part of it because it's like, you know that you're going to be causing like more harm to like one of the most fragile places in the world just so you can have your moment on top of the peak.
I don't know. All right. Well, let's leave Everest alone, everybody.
Even though we've covered it just now.
God, I know. God damn it. Someone's
going to email. You said you don't want to cover Everest, but you just talked about it for 15 minutes.
Well, funny you mentioned listener emails, because today we're answering the bell with the return of Pickleball Corner. It's back. Because multiple listeners have asked when we're going to poke fun at the pickleball bear. And so this week, a story came up that I thought was appropriate, because this week, sandal maker Olakai announced the release of their new pickleball shoe. Yes, the pickleball shoe. Now, I have two thoughts on this. One, pickleball players can play barefoot because you barely move when you're playing pickleball. So I don't want, don't tell me they need specific shoes. All right. This is an attempt at, this is a category cash grab.
I've played barefoot tennis. It's not.
So there you, that's tennis.
It's not particularly fun.
Right. So the number two thought on this is, like, just stay in your lane, Olakai. Like, we talked about this. We recorded a new beer and gear yesterday. We mentioned it on that as well. Like, even if we need pickleball shoes, I don't think we need them from Olakai. I mean, you could give Olakai a 10-year head start on owning the pickleball shoe market, and a Nike or an Adidas would show up and just blow them out of the water.
Yeah.
Like, it'd just be like, hey, I have my Olakais. Oh, Nike has them now? Oh, never mind. I'll go buy my Nikes. I think this is a perfect example. It's one of the reasons why I want to bring it up, as much as I want to make fun of pickleball. But when we say we make too much stuff, this is the best example of it. Because, like, Olakai is an established brand. They've proven themselves. They're like, hey, we want to make really good, high-quality sandals. But
they make other shoes, though. They make shoes and boots.
Probably they shouldn't. They should probably make really good flip-flops.
I didn't know that until 30 seconds ago. I assumed they only make sandals.
But it's like, that's why... This is how we end up with new stuff. Olakai was proven as a concept for one thing, and they're like, hey, we're going to do this thing now. Now they're going to make pickleball shoes. I mean, and I guess, look, even if they get established, they're still just making all of the, I guarantee you it's going to be a lot of unwanted shoes selling at a discount. Just be who you are, man. Why can't people just be who they are?
We need to make it, I don't know how we were going to do this, but we need to make it cool to wear things that aren't necessarily designed for what you're doing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we need to make that cool again. Remember when, like, you just had, well, we don't remember because we're not old enough. You just have, like, a pair of Chuck Taylors.
And you
might be a Wilt Chamberlain, and you might be a kid down the street. But this is the shoe that
same
you
shoe.
Had.
You're right.
And, like, you wore that shoe to ride bikes and to play basketball.
And then you had a pair of dress shoes.
And people were fine. Like,
and it was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
I get the fashion aspect of footwear. And I definitely played. I see shoes. I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. I'd like to have those shoes.
Yeah.
But I don't believe for a second that we need pickleball shoes.
I know for sure that you don't need pickleball shoes. I mean, you do not need them. If you, I played competitive tennis, and I owned one pair of actual shoes made for tennis, and they were a little bit better than, like, just regular athletic shoes, but not a ton. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal. I didn't, like, win matches because I had the right shoes, you know?
Are you looking at the new
I'm
pickleball shoes?
They are
hideous, by the way. That is like a Payless, like, you know, Nike knockoff from like 1992.
Also $140, dude.
Fuck that. Come on. Come on.
It has breathable sport mesh.
Oh, shut up.
And soft lining for all day wear. And a high grip durable outsole.
These are terrible.
What I was excited about until now was I just assumed that the Olakai pickleball shoe was a sandal.
Oh, see, missed opportunity, Olakai. That's exactly what it should have been.
I just assumed it was. I was shocked that it was just a closed-toed shoe, but I also didn't realize they already made closed-toed shoes. I thought they just made sandals, but yeah, could have been a badass like sand. Like, that would have made sense, I guess. I mean, we wouldn't need it, but at least it was like a differentiator.
It's the same. I mean, it's like, look at Chaco's line. This is where we talked about on Gear and Beer when we did Bedrock. It's like, don't expand anymore. Like, I said it'd be great to have a flip-flop from Bedrock. I still would like to have that. If they don't want to make it, great. Don't start making shoes. Just be Bedrock. Make the most awesome sandals that are out there. Chaco is making, like, Chelsea boots and stuff like that. And it's like, anyway, okay.
Well,
I'm going to settle down now.
Well, I mean, it's funny because the AJ podcast, basically at the end of most of them, it's like, I always felt like we're like just a few minutes away from just advocating for Buddhism because so much of that podcast ends up being about just being happy with whatever. And like, I feel like ours ends up being like at the end of it is like, well, anyway, comrade, like I'm going back to the communist, like, because we don't know enough. I mean, the thing is we don't really know enough about like what happens if Olakai just made sandals. I mean, a lot of people lose their jobs. At a certain
point.
But
if they never made them in the first place, those jobs wouldn't
exist.
That's true.
Yeah. But
no, I look, it's I'm
there's been a lot of good commentary about the Schitt's Pacine movie from Patagonia, which I still haven't watched, but on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And it's basically the same argument that we have with each other when we talk about Patagonia in general, because it's like there's plenty of people who are like too many SKUs and other people that are like, yeah, but they're like effective altruist stuff works like really well. But at the end of the day, nobody has any idea. Like a lot of times people end up saying, but you know what? Like, it's like if we change all this,
Mm-hmm.
Like millions of people lose their jobs in like overnight without like obvious solutions.
Millions,
to that.
But you know,
honestly,
you know.
Probably. I mean, like think about how many things don't need to exist at all. Like whether it's an actual physical product or like a software package or whatever. And it's like if we start like paring things down to what we actually need, then like all of a sudden we need like 9 people. I mean, that's kind of right, what the AI revolution is all about, right?
It is. I think though, but you're kind of then. At some point, it's because everything's snowballing, right? Like my point about this isn't to like, you know, tell people at Olokai they shouldn't have a job. It's to say like, why does Sierra get to open 30 new stores? It's because people are making pickleball shoes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like if Olokai just had stayed being Olokai, what made them great? Yeah, I'm sure they'd have less revenue. Yeah, or they'd employ fewer people. But why? What's wrong? They'd probably be, you know, I don't know. Maybe they'd be less profitable. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of this. I just see this as an example of the inner workings of Olokai. I just see this as an example. When you see these expansions that really don't make much sense and probably won't work. Yeah. I could be wrong. We could be 2 years from now. I could be like eating crow going, holy shit, Olokai is owning the pickleball market. And yeah, I got to like,
it still would be like annoying. You know, I hadn't thought about this until just right now. What's interesting is, okay, so if you're a shoe designer and you work for Olokai, right? Like you have to be advocating for new shoes. Otherwise, why do you have a job?
Absolutely.
And so, and all the people that support that too, you know, have to be involved with it. But it's in the same way that like we like have meetings once a week. Okay, what are we going to talk about on the pod this week?
It's
not any different than someone going, oh shit, we have to design a new shoe because it's been a month or whatever. It's been 18 months.
I mean, we don't pollute a river to produce a podcast, but yes.
I just had never thought about before, like how, like, what do you do if you're like you... It'd be interesting to see, like, okay, so if you're like, if it was like a bootmaker, where like there's really no reason to like change, like, do they just have like you could probably just contract out your shoe design once every year or two if you want to like make an iterative change. It's interesting. Well, I never thought about
Feral wetsuits, right? We talked about on Gear and Beer how they were like, hey, it's Alex and Buzz.
Yeah, yeah,
right. And they're fine, you know, they're making one thing with a few iterations of one thing, so it makes sense. No, this is a great way to tease it because, you know, we're recording this on Friday. I haven't even started writing it yet, but Wednesday's episode next week, I'm titling it the so what of sustainability, because, and not to spoil it, and you're going to listen to this on Monday, come back on Wednesday to hear my full thoughts on it, but it's, you know, consumers can't be relied on to fix this because we're value driven. You're right. Brands really, we can be critical and I will continue to be. Mostly I'm critical though. It's less about even the ethical bit of making too much stuff. It's just like, this doesn't make much sense from a brand point of view for me. And it's just like a clear kind of cash grab than it is a really good strategic decision for Olokai, right? Brands are businesses. Like their motivation is to make money. That's why they exist. We end up putting probably more on them than we should in the outdoor space because we want them just to fix things and not do the dumb things that they do.
Yeah.
But they're kind of like, that's what they exist to do that. The only way any of this really gets fixed is through like regulation and legislation. That is the only way this changes. So I'll talk more about that on Wednesday.
Are you going to sponsor some legislation?
Well, it's just, if you're going to spend your time, you know, getting angry about stuff or posting about things and, oh, brands should do less or people should do better. It's like, maybe write some letters to your senators, like, you know, or work to get people elected. Like that has been proven to work in the past. Like where there has been change in the past. Now it's difficult, but it's really the only thing that has worked previously.
Yeah. That's all part of Pickleball Corner. That's what we could have had that whole conversation while playing pickleball.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, I will go full the other way on this. If Croc starts making pickleball shoes, because at that
point, do they not?
Do they? Yeah, should we check?
You can get pickleball charms or whatever. Anyway.
Well, all right. I guess we can wrap it up there. Kind of a downer of a show today, everybody. We had a lot of rough stuff in the news this week.
It's our fault. We get what the news serves us.
That's true. That's true. Hope you enjoyed it. What's going on with you? And there's a new AJ coming out soon, right?
New AJ coming out. I think we got the proofs yesterday, so it probably goes to the printer like for real, like next week.
That's crazy. I feel like I just got the last one. That's awesome.
Well, that's how it works, man. 4 year.
All right. Well, that's it for the day. Thanks for listening. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening and here to take us out. I think he's here. Is he here? Chris.
Yeah, he came in.
Come on, man. They're waiting for you. Chris DeMake's going to sing the Rock Fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.